Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Off the Record is a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and welcome to another bonus episode of Off the Record. I'm your host, Jordan Runtog. Thanks so much for listening. In our latest chapter, David Bowie went from Starman to Soul Man, trading high-concept sci-fi tales for the sounds that enthralled him as a boy, rhythm and blues. From the moment he first heard Tutti Frutti back in the 50s, he'd wanted to be Little Richard. Somewhere along the line, his goal shifted. But when he arrived in America in the spring of 1974 to mount his budget-busting Diamond Dogs tour, he began to reconnect with the music that had inspired him so long ago. This current tour was an overblown spectacle, weighed down with rigid choreography, strict music cues, and huge sets, not to mention the dark dystopian narrative. Impressive, yes, but all the theatricality didn't leave a lot of room for genuine emotion. A little of David's heart and soul. Or in this case, Billy's soul. David's renewed love of R&B was stoked by his new girlfriend at the time, a striking young model and burgeoning singer named Ava Cherry. They'd met at an after-party for a Stevie Wonder concert in early 1973 and quickly hit it off. As she would later say, their romance had all the hallmarks of a fairy tale. Strolls in Paris, nights in an elegant castle, fancy dinners, cheering crowds, celebrity friends, and lots of great songs. Sounds almost like a Disney movie, except for the fact that David was still technically married to his wife, Angie. That part's a little different. David fostered Ava's budding musical talent, recording her as part of a soul trio he'd assembled called the Astronettes. The group was short-lived, but the sessions are well worth checking out. In return, Ava acted as Bowie's guide through the American R&B scene. Her father had been a musician, and she regaled David with tales of life on the black blues circuit in 1940s Chicago. She also fulfilled his lifelong dream by bringing him up to Harlem's Apollo Theater to see some of the hottest R&B acts in the country. As we all know, David's reignited passion for soul led him to Philadelphia to cut the relentlessly funky Young Americans. The album featured Ava Cherry on backup vocals, alongside Robin Clark and a young Luther Vandross. Ava also joined him on stage as part of the so-called Philly Dogs tour in late 1974, but she also shared his private life as a girlfriend, loving a side of David that few would ever get to see. Their relationship wouldn't endure, but she continues to honor David in her music. Last January, she released a funked-up version of Bowie's 1983 hit Let's Dance, and this year she joined the star-studded virtual tribute concert, belting out ferocious versions of Young Americans and Fame, just as she did on the original recordings. In addition to recording a new album of original songs, she's also working on a film about her life with Bowie, which is slated to resume filming this summer, if COVID-19 allows. Ava spoke to me about her time with David and the memories and music that they shared during those golden years in the mid-70s. I suppose to start, take me back to the night you met David.
Well, I mean, okay, here it is. You know, I just moved to New York, and the funny thing is that I was dating a guy who owned a hair salon, and I was modeling, And I'd never lived in New York before. I was just getting myself together. And my friend who owned the hair salon said, "Listen, for the New York Daily News, would you mind bleaching, if we bleached your hair blonde and short?" And I was like, "No, you know, I was game." You know, they said we need to bleach your hair up really like platinum blonde and like a short afro. And I said, "Okay." So I did it, and I was in the paper in the New York Times. And so a lot of people saw that and whatever. And then I got an agent and all this other stuff. So one day my agent comes to me and he has this album and he goes, "Ava, listen, there's this guy named David Bowie and this is his new record. He's British." And he said, he's going to be here soon performing at Radio City. And, I just thought you might, listen to his record. I don't know how he got, because David wasn't well known here yet or anything like that. He was pretty well known in Europe. So I said, okay, I took the record home and I listened to it. And I looked at it, the album cover, and I said to myself, "Wow, he's really a good looking guy, you know, and I like that he's kind of strange and he's kind of different." You know, and so then I put it on and I started listening to the tracks, and I was just blown away. It was so different. Moon Age Daydream was my favorite on the album, which David asked me when he first met me, which one I liked the best. But I was also, friends with Stevie Wonder. I hadn't met David yet, but I was friends with Stevie Wonder, and he was in New York doing his show at Carnegie Hall. And so he said, "Well, we're going to do the show, but we need a place to give a party after." And I was working in this club called Genesis that the guy that owned what's the Hibachi Steakhouse, Rocky Aoki, he owned the Benihana's of Tokyo. I don't know if you ever remember those.
Oh, Benihana's. Yeah, I remember Benihana's.
Yeah, Rocky Aoki was the guy's name. And he owned also a club called Genesis on the East Side. And I worked as a cocktail waitress in there. And so I said to Stevie, I said, "Well, I work in this club called Genesis. I'm sure they'll let you give a party in there. It's a nice place to give a party." So they got a hold of the people. And the next thing we knew, the party was going to be at Genesis. So the night of the party, I show up and, all dressed up, looking fabulous. Because this was right after Stevie's concert. And he did an incredible, incredible standing ovation concert at Carnegie Hall. And so I walk in, as I'm walking in, Steve is standing at the door. And Stevie Wonder has this incredible thing that he can sometimes know who's there even when he doesn't see them. You know what I'm saying? And as I was walking past, he goes, "Well, maybe you smell my perfume. I don't know." He said, "Is that Ava Cherry?" I said, "Steve, how do you know it was me?" He goes, I know, right? So started off the night really good. Everybody was in a great mood because, as I said, his concert was stellar. I mean, he just sang his heart out, that night, and he got a standing ovation. And so, we're downstairs, and everybody's been invited, Gladys, and I think Aretha might have even been there. Just a lot of more soul artists, some big names. So I'm standing there, so they start singing. So a song comes on and everybody in the room just starts singing in the room, whatever the song was, all the great singers, they're standing there singing. Like, I wasn't really a professional singer yet or anything like that, but I was standing there with them, right? And so everybody's singing and my agent comes up to me, goes, "You're not going to believe who's here." I'm like, "Who?" He goes, "That guy, David Bowie." I'm like, "What?" Because by this time, I played that record about 100 times, and I was, already smitten. I was in love, honey, just listening to the music and looking at the picture, just because it was so different and it was so well done. I was like, "Oh, my God." He goes, "I'm going to go get him and introduce you." I was like, "Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God." I was, freaking out kind of inside, because So he brings him over, and David's wearing this like electric blue suit. And he has his hair is really high. It's real ziggy. And it was red, really red. And so he walks up to me, he goes, Ava, this is David Bowie. David, this is Ava Cherry. David says to me, oh, it's a pleasure to meet you, Ava. And he just really, I was like, oh my God. And he goes, I love your hair. And I said, I love yours too. So, you know, we both had this hair color thing in common. And that I was kind of weird. And a black chick with, you know, blonde afro. And so anyway, we start talking and they were singing and I was kind of singing in between while I was talking. He goes, you're a singer? And so I said, well, yeah, you know, I mean, I wasn't a professional yet, but I wasn't going to say no. I mean, anything I think I can do, I'm going to say yes until you prove me that I can't do it. Okay, then I'll be, you know, then I can't do it if I can't. But anyway, so we were just, you know, then we started talking and he was like, well, you know, I've just done my first album for America and I'm playing Radio City this weekend. You know, I'm planning a world tour, and I'm going to be in Japan. And I'm thinking maybe you might be good for this part to do this. He says, you know, the look and everything like that. Now, if you can sing, that's really great. You know, and, you know, he heard me sing a little bit, but he said, you'll have. And I said, okay. If you want me to, and he said, well, I'll have to introduce you to my manager, Tony DeFriesen. You know, we have a rehearsal tomorrow at RCA. Can you make the rehearsal and do an audition? And I said, yeah. So the next day, I'm at RCA, and the Spiders were there. That's the first time I'd met them. Actually, I didn't really hang out with them too much when I first met David. There was a couple of times, like when we did the 1980 floor show and all that stuff, where I really worked with them in Earl's Court and all that. But basically, I was in the same room with the Spiders. It was great, you know? So anyway, I got up on stage. I don't know what song we did. I sang. The manager heard me. He goes, yeah, I think she'll work great for this part, right? So the next thing I knew, David said to me, okay, listen. You know, you're going to have to, we had dinner and, you know, all the other niceties. And of course, I was I was smitten is all I can tell you. I was smitten.
Oh, what was your first date like?
Oh, it was so nice because after we did the audition, he said, well, would you have dinner with me tonight? And I was like, and he says, well, go see a show or something. Go see a live performance. I think Charlie Mingus was performing with him. Yeah, yeah. And I said, yeah. So I got all dressed up and I met him at the hotel and he was dressed and I was a gentleman. He opened the door. He was just the best. And so we had the most wonderful dinner. And then we went to see Charlie Mingus. And like, I really wasn't into Charlie Mingus because he was kind of abstract for me, but David was really into it. I got into it. I just, because I love all music, but I just really wasn't familiar with Charlie Mingus when he was telling me about him. So anyway, we saw that show. And so he says, well, you want to come back and have some champagne at the hotel? And I'm like, yeah, okay. Why not? I'm having a blast. I'm having a good time. So he was like, well, which song did you like the best on that album? And I said, oh, Moon Age Daydream. I love it. I fell in love with it. I'm so in love with that song. He goes, oh, okay. That's great. You know? And so anyway, we, you know, I spent the night there. Of course, I spent the night there. Where else was I going to go? I mean, it just wasn't anything better than that to do. And we had the most wonderful romantic evening. And that was how it began.
That is a beautiful first date. That is a first date for the books.
And it really is.
But there was a problem. The tour never came together. What happened there?
The tour that he was telling me that they wanted me to do got canceled because he got sick. He got the flu. And they said, so what happened was, he told me he was going to call me. I have to fill this in. And he said, I'm going to send you the records that you're going to learn and tell you your ticket and everything like that. So, you know, we can get everything going. So I said, oh, yeah, okay, well, I have to go to Chicago and say goodbye to my parents before I go to Europe or anything. So I quit my job in New York I got rid of my apartment. I had everything set up and I was doing fine. And I had the job at Genesis, and then I was modeling and singing to whatever. And then I get home after doing all of that. And 3 days after I was here in Chicago, I get a telegram saying, Ava, so sorry, David became ill and we have to cancel the tour.
No.
I was like, oh my God. Oh no. Oh no. My whole life, here I am back in Chicago and I had my life on the right track, you know? I was so depressed for a couple of days. I was trying to figure out what to do. And I had remembered that this guy that was from Germany, he had a place in the south of France, in Monaco. And he had asked me if I wanted to spend the summer hanging out in Monaco. Now, I didn't really want to be with him. So when he asked me, I told him no. But when this happened, that they sent me that telegram, I called him up and I told him yes. Because I just saw that it was my only way to get to Europe. I didn't really have the money to go. And that was my only way to get, you know, I heard that, David spent time in France and in London and whatever. He was in France a lot. So I said yes. And so anyway, he sent me the ticket. And the next thing I knew, and I'd never been to Europe before, I was in Monaco. And I was like, what? It's the most beautiful fucking place in the world. What the hell? What am I doing here? It's so great. I mean, I was loving it. It was really beautiful. And of course, he was rich, this guy, so he treated me very nice. But I didn't like him like that, you know?
Oh, no.
I didn't feel romantic. And he was really wanting to be romantic. Oh, God. It's nothing worse than a guy who wants to be romantic with you when you don't want to be romantic with him. But he was a nice person. I wasn't trying to be mean, but I did see him as a means to an end, and I'm being honest. Anyway, so I was there for a little while, and he had a friend, another girl, that was older, and she apparently was wealthy, too. Her grandmother giving her another apartment in the south of France. You know, they all hang out together. This was his, I suppose, maybe it was somebody he might have been married to or whatever before or whatever, and they were still friends. Anyway, to make a long story short, I was starting to just, all I could think of was David, you know, and how I just wanted to find him. And so she called me up one day and she said, Ava, listen, I am seeing that you are not liking Heinz, like you are not really loving to be with Heinz. And I was like, well, I don't mean to be anything meaner. I just want to go to France or something. So she goes, would you feel better if you did not stay here in the apartment with him? She says, my grandmother left me an apartment and you could stay there if you want for the rest of your time here. And I said, okay. So she moved me over there. So I was there one day and I had met this real nice guy and he was having tea with me, right? He comes to the guy that invited me comes to the door and I open it and this guy is in there, but we weren't doing anything. We were just talking, okay? So he goes, okay, I can see that you don't, you know, you want to be with me and you want to be with somebody else. So you want to go to Paris? I said, well, I would like to go to Paris. He said, okay. I said, but I need you to give me 1,000 francs so because, you know, so I can, you know. He says, no, I give you the money. And I said, well, where do I go? He goes, you go try to find a hotel near the Boulevard Saint-Germain. And then, you know, try to go to the Café de Flore. And that's where all the celebrities hang out. That's where everybody hangs out, who's anybody. So that's what I did. I gave him the money. I took the train and I got in and I checked into this like all girls, all women's hotel, which was right like about 5 blocks away from the Boulevard Saint-Germain. And it was nice. It was clean. And so that was it. And then after about 8 months, I started getting kind of, because, I would be hearing that David had come to Paris from different people or reading it in the music papers or something. But I never, it was like maybe one time I read that. And so one day I'm in this bar and I hear them speaking in French and I hear them say, David Bowie. And I heard his name. I went running down. I said, excuse me, tu as dit David Bowie? And he said, oui, il est là-bas à chez Castel. So he's over across the street at Castel. I'm like, really? I'm like, really? He goes, oui. So I'm like, I look cute. I look pretty. But I was not dressed as Castel because it was a very, pearls and diamonds kind of a club. I didn't care. I just went running across the street. And it had like a stairwell that was spiraled down. And I went inside and I was looking down from a stairwell, looking around. And so David's bodyguard, Stewie, saw me. And he comes over, he goes, Ava, what are you doing here? I said, I came to find David. He can't just do me like that. I mean, we had such a wonderful time. And I quit my job. And I was saying all this stuff to him. He goes, oh, my God, the governor's going to freak out when he sees you. He called him the governor. Right. And he was really cockney. He was like that. The governor's good when he sees you, mate. All that. Anyway, so David was sitting talking to this woman that was dripping in diamonds and pearls, right? He was talking to her, and so Stewie has my hand. And he pulls me up to in front of David. And David's looking at her, and all of a sudden he turns and he sees me. And he goes, oh, Ava, what are you doing here? And I was like, I came to find you. I didn't want you to leave me. I quit my job and went home, and then you said it was canceled, and he was like, oh, wow. He says, I'm really sorry. I got ill. He said, but you came all the way over here just to find me? And I was like, yes. He was like, oh, wow. And so he was talking to her. And then he said, sit down. I sat down. And the next thing I know, he said something to her. And then he goes, let's go. And that was it. And we walked out and got in the limousine and went to Deauville, which we had the most romantic evening. It was so wonderful.
Deauville is the studio where he was recording Pinups, built in a former castle. He took you to a literal castle. I mean, the fairy tale continues.
Oh, my God. It was a castle that, because I'd never been in a 17th century castle like that before, except, you just go on to England and go to. And it had fireplaces that were as big as a wall, and they'd made it into a recording studio. And we spent like a week there. It was heaven.
Wow.
It was heaven. That was how it began.
Now, what did you do when he wasn't busy sort of attending to the business of being David Bowie, touring and recording and all that? What did you like to do together? How would you like to spend a day or a night out in the town together? What would you love to do together?
Oh, well, we would go and have dinner and we'd walk by the Seine and we would, we'd go see other artists perform, Brian Ferry. He and Brian Ferry were good friends too. And, they were great. We'd go see, whoever would be performing. But basically he just liked to, because that wasn't during a drug time for David. He wasn't doing drugs when I met him. He would smoke a little hash or something and drink red wine. So he was so different. He was like so warm, because he wasn't doing those things. This was like, the first year that I knew him, he wasn't doing drugs. So I know. And so, and then of course he loved to make love. And that was one of his favorites. that was a favorite of ours. Yeah.
Now, at what point did you know that Angie was also in the picture?
Well, truthfully, I knew it early because you didn't let me finish the story about when we were in the hotel. And the next morning I was like, I first met him in New York. And I was so excited, and I felt like, wow, I feel like I'm in love, and I've never really felt like this before. I mean, I really was serious what I said. I had, because he was so different. And so we're lying there, and all of a sudden, the phone rings, and he answers it, and he says, hello. And he said, okay. So he must have said Angie was downstairs and send her up. So the door knocks. He goes and answers the door, and it's Angie. He opens the door, and I have a robe, his robe on. And so Angie goes, hello, darling. I'm so good to see you, darling. And he goes, Angie, this is Ava Cherry. Oh, hello. She kisses me and hugs me. Just see you. You know, I have to go back to London tomorrow night. And so I just wanted to stop and say something to you before I went. So I'm sitting there like, what? I'm like, so I didn't say much because I didn't know what to say.
Right. Like, this is different.
Yeah. So then she goes, okay, I have to go now. She was only there like 15 minutes, maybe 10, 15 minutes, but she was real nice to me and she leaves. So I didn't know how I was going to say it to him. I said, so David, why didn't you tell me you were married? I said, I don't know if I would have been here right now if I'd known that. And so he says, oh no, we have an open marriage. She has a girlfriend and she has a boyfriend and, you know, and she does what she wants and I do it. I'm like, really? Are you serious? He goes, yeah, it's been that way for a couple of years. So by that time I was already hooked. I was already smitten. There was nothing I could do about how I felt. I wasn't going to let him go. Listen, Jordan, I didn't know, and you know, you're a man, but I'm telling you, I wasn't going to let him go. I said, well, honey, she's fine with, you know, me, you know, being with you. And I said, well, she may not be to myself. I said, she may not be fine after I finish here.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess. The 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again. The First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances. And the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I wanted to ask you about the recording sessions you did with David for the Astronets. What was he like working with in the studio? Like, I imagine he must have been a real perfectionist.
Oh, wow. He was. But he was, you know, he was a perfectionist, but he was just kind of already know what he really wanted. So he made it feel comfortable. He made it feel fun, is what I'm saying. It never felt like, oh, God, recording with this guy. It was fun. I had a boss. And, that's basically it. I mean, anything we worked on, like, you know, we worked on the Astronets, which were meant to be only demos because we hadn't finished them. And he told me we were going to finish them. But then he had this thing with Tony DeFreeze with the whole thing about the money. And so he had to stop producing me and it never got finished. And Tony went ahead and released it with just demos.
Oh, I see. Is there a lesson from him that you learned from him during these sessions that sort of sticks with you to this day? What's something that he taught you musically?
Oh my God. He taught me a lot of things, not just musically, but I mean, he taught me to appreciate, you know, a lot of things, you know, classical music, all music. I mean, I love classical music now because I started out with Vivaldi with him and films, German Expressionism and Andy Warhol. I mean, he taught me a lot of things. I was a savvy, street smart young lady, but he, you know, I wasn't an intellectual, but now I am. And so he taught me, you know, how to, you know, work the stage and the lights, you know, when we were on stage together, he'd go, okay, I want you to come. I want you to go up the stairs. I want you to be at the top and the spot's going to be on you. And then I want you to slowly come down the stairs. And then I want you to start to sing, blah, 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 blah. So he just taught, he was my mentor. You know, he taught me, you know, it wasn't just a love relationship, which I mean, I did love him. He's the first man I really loved like that. And but he just taught me, you know, how to handle myself. Like one time, I remember we were at an Andy Warhol party, and they were drinking, you know, great champagne. I love champagne, and so I was drinking, and I was getting a little bit drunk. I hadn't learned how to drink it to a point where I didn't feel drunk yet, but I got a little bit drunk. And so I was at the other side of the room, and David, I was talking to somebody, and then I wasn't talking to them. David walks over to me, and he goes, Ava, so listen, you're a little bit drunk, aren't you? And I said, oh, I guess I am. He goes, okay, but you know what? The press is looking at you, and they're taking your picture. So do you want to be in the magazine or the paper tomorrow, you know, looking drunk? And I said, no. He goes, well, I just told you, and you're with me. And I immediately stopped, and it never happened again because I didn't realize it, that the press was taking my pictures all the time if I was near him. You know what I'm saying?
That must have just been the energy shift of walking into a room together. That must have been strange to be on the receiving end of all those flash bulbs and all that attention.
Oh my God!
Was that hard?
At first it was kind of strange, but then I got used to it. No, but I'm just saying I didn't. But he was being so honest with me. He wasn't angry with me because I was drunk. He was just saying, "Don't do it outside of the house because people are going to take your picture and try to, you know, make you look bad, you know?" And so I appreciated that he told me that from then on in, whenever we would go out, nothing, I would just be, you know, so yeah, it was just, he taught me so many things, Jordan. I can't even just say one, but the music, you know, we appreciate, he loved soul music, which is why we ended up with Young Americans because he was like, I want to do a soul record. I love Marvin Gaye and Aretha Franklin and Michael Jackson. And he says, you know, and that was when we started talking about doing a soul album.
What was it like going up to the Apollo together and seeing the main ingredient and the spinners? I mean, that must have been incredible. He must have flipped.
Well, he flipped because I'd seen all those people before, but I'm saying, yeah, because I said to him, he goes, well, where do we go? I said, we got to go to the Apollo, which is where all the great groups perform. And he said, okay, well, I got to find some people. So somebody attached him to Carlos, and because Carlos was with the main ingredient. And so he sent me on to New York, and then he came like 2 weeks later, and then we went to the Apollo. We drove up to the Apollo in the limousine, and you know that he had on a red suit with the red hair, and I had my. And we drove up, and all these black people were standing on the corner, and they go, "Who's that?" And I said, "That's David Bowie." He said, "David Bowie?" I said, "David Bowie." He's like, "Oh, okay." Okay, you guys have fun. It was just so funny. You know, no black people did not know David until I started being with him and all that. They really didn't. They didn't appreciate him until afterwards. Okay, then we did Young Americans, and so then we went in and we were watching. It was Richard Pryor too was on that bill. The Spinners, the Temptations. The main ingredient, and David just enjoyed that show so much. He enjoyed it so much. He was like, wow. So then he had already, somebody had put him in touch with Carlos, I guess. And so that was what happened. And the next thing we knew, David had already decided where we were going to record, which was at Sigma Sound. And that was where they brought Luther to the studio. And that's where he met Luther Vandross.
Oh, well, I mean, all those incredible Philly soul records coming from Sigma Sound. I mean, that what were those sessions like with Luther Vandross and Robin Clark and Carlos Alomar? What were those sessions like? Those must have been fun.
Well, yeah, they were hard work, though.
Yeah.
It was hard work. You know, even though we did have fun doing it, I mean, I had fun because I was with David. I mean, I was with him after it, but... But it was when we were in the studio, it was hard work. David was about getting the work done, so he wasn't about playing around. We were in there, and we were all working real hard, especially on that song, Right. That was the hardest song in the world to do. Lord have mercy, Jesus. It was hard. But it was a great experience. And the funny thing about the Philly Sound people is that he had asked those guys to all play on the record, and they didn't do it because I think they were kind of scared about him being a white artist, and it had always been, you know, black artists that they had done stuff with. But David didn't mind when they said no. He just got his own band together. You know, he was just, yeah, very independent.
Your father was also a musician, and it sounds like David got a lot of sort of style tips from your dad, like silk ties and the pants. How did they get along?
Oh, my dad was like, you know, the coolest dude. He was like, they got along like a house on fire. Please believe me. He came to my house, my parents' house, and for dinner, and he saw my dad's. I was showing him like, this is when my dad was he was with a band called the Benny Latham Band, and they opened for like Count Basie and some other people or whatever. They wore these zoot suits in the bandstand. And so I said, this is my dad's zoot suit. And he was like, what? So then I think he tried the jacket on and it looked really cool on him. So he had Freddie to knock off suits that were similar to that Gouster look. And that's where the word Gouster came from me. I'm the one that told him about the Gousters in Chicago. They all wore baggy pants and they all wore big, you know, zoot suits kind of clothes.
And what does the word mean? Is it basically like cool dude?
Yeah, Gouster, you know, instead of gangster.
Oh, I never made that connection. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, everybody keeps trying to talk about that word. He only knew about that word because of me. I mean, nobody else knew. He started changing, making songs and, you know, the Gouster and all that. And I was like, okay, whatever. And all the clothes, you know, that outfit with, you know, the flight suit, that was my flight suit, and the shoes he had on.
The shoes too? I didn't know the shoes too.
He could wear my shoes. I couldn't believe it. I got big feet though. I wear size 9. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, you know, he really dug my dad, and my dad dug him. My dad was a musician, so he was totally into the mentality, you know.
One of my great heroes is John Lennon. Tell me about being at the Electric Lady Studios sessions for Fame and Across the Universe. I've been dying to ask you about that.
That was so incredible because, you know, in the museum pieces that, you know, remember David Bowie is and all the countries that it was in and everything like that.
Oh, the exhibitions. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Well, I represented here in Chicago. I didn't know it myself, but in some of the plastic cases that they had David's artifacts in, David had his diary. And there was this one page, and my friend said, didn't you see this about you? And I'm like, what? There was maybe two things that he wrote down about me in his diary. But he said, today I introduced Ava to a Beatle. I think it was genuine. Yeah, he said, today I introduced Ava. That's what he said. I couldn't believe it. It was this one page, and they took it out and they put it in the clip case. And it said, today I introduced Ava to a Beatle, and we're going to do Fame. We're going to work on a song called Fame. And that was how it started.
Wow. David doesn't strike me as somebody who's easily starstruck, but I imagine that it's hard not to be around John Lennon.
Oh, no. So then while we're in Electric Ladyland waiting for him, right? We're all set up and everything. He turns around to me, he goes, wow, I wonder if he's, I says, I'm so excited to meet John Lennon. He goes, I wonder if he wears those granny glasses all the time. And so I said, I don't know, you know, man. The doorbell rings, the door opens, and there's John with the granny glasses on. Ah, he was like, unbelievable. David turns around to me and looks and goes, oh, he's got the granny glasses on, right? So then John comes in, hello, David, hello, mate. You know, they were talking like that and everything. And he was like, it's a pleasure to work with you, mate. It's a pleasure, it's a pleasure. So then they were talking and whatever. And then John was jamming on the 12th string. And he was playing Across the Universe. Oh, it was so beautiful. Wow. He was playing it and he goes, you know, I'm really enjoying myself today. You know, there's not a lot of sessions I love or enjoy, and I'm really enjoying myself today. And David just looked and said, oh, really? Oh. That is so great. Then Yoko comes in with a great big tray of sushi and says, I got lunch. And she puts it down and she leaves. And I understood exactly why they didn't like her. It was because she was women's lib, and I didn't know it until I met her. She was like women's rights, women being treated equally. And that was how John treated her. He treated her like a queen. And so that was what happened there. But that part right there. David tells me, go in there and just keep saying, I said, why? He goes, just do it. So I went in and I did it. And that's what they ended up with it between his voice and John's and mine mixed together.
That is an incredible trio. That's got to be fun being part of that trio.
Oh, it was so much fun. It was so. And like I said, I didn't know why he asked me to do it, because I never heard of them doing it like that. But anyway, so that was great. And then after we finished doing the session, we went back to the Dakota and had dinner with them, you know, and we just sat up all night and talked. We just had the best time with Yoko and John.
John always seemed like he had an incredible sense of humor. He must have, that must have been a funny.
Oh my God, he would make you laugh and stuff. It was really hysterical. And she had like this herbal room, you know, because in the Dakota, It's like nine huge rooms, like in a big house in a mansion. And they had like, maybe not nine, but at least six big rooms. And she had one room where she did her art and everything like that, and one room where she had her plants and her herbs and all of that other stuff. And she was real sweet, real sweet.
I know that David hung out with Mick quite a bit, Mick Jagger, during this period. What was their relationship like? Was it a rivalry? Was it a friendship? Was it all the above?
No, it wasn't a rivalry. It was those two tough guys, two guys that are hot during the same period, two different kind of genres, because David was glam rock and Mick was like, you know, the honky tonk blues, you know, rocker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They admired one another. They admired what one another did. And so we used to hang out together and go out to dinner together and party together and all that other stuff. And they became good friends.
One of my favorite songs from Young Americans is Can You Hear Me, which I believe David wrote for you.
David didn't write Can You Hear Me for me. He wrote Can You Hear Me. He wrote way back with Lulu. But I mean, I don't know whether he did or not. He never told me he did. I'm just saying that when I was first with him, he wrote it and then Lulu sang it. And I didn't know. Sometimes David would write songs. He wouldn't tell the person if it was about them or not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you know, it would be like the songs that would be about me would be like stay. It's what I had to say or do something. What I never say is stay this time. I meant to so bad because you could never really tell when somebody wants something you want to. So it was about me wanting to be a superstar too. I did. And that was one song, Stay, and there was the other song, Golden Years. Listen to the words. Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere, angel. In walked luck and you looked in time, always walk tall, act fine. Because he walked in and we attached to each other. And from then on, he was trying to help me. And he saw, you know, and so, you know, I was super young, and he was so there's a lot of things like that. Those two songs, Golden Years and Stay.
That must bring back, when you hear them, just so many memories. I mean, I can't imagine what that's like to hear a song that's that enormous and know, oh, that's about me. I'm a part of that. How does that feel?
I know. No, it did. But it used to make me feel sad. To make me feel sad and tearful. But now I just enjoy that I know that it was about me.
I hope you feel proud.
Oh, I feel proud. I do. I mean, I know because when David and I broke up, it wasn't because of anything like me cheating on him or him cheating on me or me doing something wrong. It was because of the business and Main Man was all messed up and the money was all going crazy and he didn't know where his money was and all that. So he just wanted to break from everybody and anything that seemed like that he had to be responsible for. You understand? And so I've stayed in love with him for so long because I knew I didn't do anything wrong for us to break up. It wasn't, it was just a circumstance. And you know, I mean, I was loyal to him to the end. I think a lot of the people that were around him, they hated that I was with him, that I was there so long because I think they thought, as I think Angie thought, that I was just going to be like, you know, a couple of months and I was going to be a flash in the pan. But I told you, she made a mistake when she did that one.
that seemed like such a difficult period. I mean, in Los Angeles in 1975, when you were living with Claudia Jennings, and that seems like such a dark period. I mean, just was it business and money issues? Was it just the people he was surrounding him with?
No, that's what it was. It was business and money issues because when he had to go to L.A., he said to me, you know, I'm leaving tomorrow for L.A. And, you know, the guy had gotten me an apartment. Main Man got me an apartment, but it was just, I would have been by myself. And, you know, I was really, so truthfully, I don't know. I was always getting into these magical situations where something would save me from total disaster. And I was crying and I, the phone rang and I answered it, and it was my girlfriend, Claudia. And she said, Ava, I'm in New York. What are you doing? I don't see you. I was crying. She goes, why are you crying? And I said, well, I'm breaking up with David, and I don't know what to do, and he's going to leave me here. And I just feel kind of like I don't know what to do with myself. And she goes, well, why? I said, well, he's going through some money problems and things. She said, you stay right there till I get there. So she came over, and he didn't know who she was because I'd never talked about her. The doorbell rings. She comes in, and she was this really ballsy, you know, white girl that just was like a playmate that, you know, all the men had a fucking drop dead body and everything like that. But she would think like a man. I mean, she would do business like a man. She was really like, you know, she was just a tough broad, you know what I'm saying? And all the men loved her because she was beautiful, but she had brains. And so she comes in and she walks over to him and I said, this is my girlfriend, Claudia, David. And he goes, hello. And she goes, she didn't even like give him the nicety. She's like, why are you going to leave Ava here by herself and you're going to go somewhere else? And after all this time you've been together and, you know, and what does she do? She goes, something wrong. And she started talking for me. So he's looking at her like, who is this bitch?
Reading him the riot like, act.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is that he was respecting her because he knew that what she was saying was right.
Yeah.
He goes, well, I can't go into explaining it right now, but yeah, you know, I got to go tomorrow. And so she goes, okay, well, I'm taking her with me. I'm taking her to Jamaica, and then we're going to go to Barbados, and then we're going to go back to L.A. No, she said L.A. Yeah, she said. So he just said, okay, like that. So we said our goodbyes, and she said, pack your things. I packed my stuff, and she just whisked me off, and that was it. I don't know what happened to the apartment they got for me because I never went. I just went with her. And she saved me because she saved me all kinds of ways. She saved me mentally because I would have been like destroyed mentally. Like, what am I going to do with myself now? And she saved me that she took me to like, you know, because she was real good friends with Chris Blackwell, who owned Island Records, and he was in love with her. So we went and stayed with Chris and everything for a while. And we had a ball. Then we ended up back in L.A., which is where she lived. And she lived up Wonderland. And so we're there. And I had told David's lawyer, Michael, what was Michael's last name?
Oh, Lippman?
Yeah, Michael Lippman. You know more than I do. You remember more than I do. Michael Lippman. And I called him when I got to L.A. with her. And I said, Michael, listen, can you please ask David to call me? Please tell him that I'd love to talk to him. And so he goes, I'll tell him. So he did. And it was a full moon that night. And I remember the phone rings. And so she answers it. And she goes, oh, Ava, okay. She answers me the phone. And he goes, hello, darling. I said, David, you know, he goes, what are you doing here? I said, well, we went to the islands. And then, you know, Claudia lives here. He goes, she lives here. And I said, yeah, she lives up Laurel Canyon. He goes, well, that's where I am. He goes, I'll be down there in 10 minutes. I said, okay. So I told her, I said, well, he said he was coming down. She said, that's okay. She was a cool bitch.
Sounds really cool.
Oh, my God. She died. She died really young. She died when she was like 31. She in a car accident, a really bad car accident on Pacific Coast Highway.
Oh, that's awesome.
But anyway, yeah, she has her life was brief. But anyway, so the doorbell rings and it's David, and I'm so happy to see him. I mean, I know my eyes looked like I was happy because I was. I just missed him so much. And so, you know, we hugged and so I look down and I see he has two suitcases. And I said, David, why have you got your suitcases? He goes, I'm going to stay with you guys for a while. I'm like, but this isn't my house. You can't. I swear to God. I said, this isn't my house. You know, and so Claudia's standing there. I said, Claudia, she goes, that's okay. That's okay. I'll work out something. This is how she was talking. She wasn't phased or upset about any of it. She was actually intrigued by him because of she knew who he was. So she was intrigued. So she was like, she was an adventurous girl, honey. She liked adventure. So the next thing we knew, he spent the night there, and because her boyfriend lived there, Bobby Hart, who was who made the monkeys.
Oh, Boyce and Hart, yeah,
Bobby Boyce. That was Bobby Hart. That was her boyfriend.
Oh man.
And so, anyway, so the next day she comes. She goes, "Listen, darling, I fixed it." I go, "What?" She goes, "I asked Natalie Wood and Robert Wagner could borrow their apartment for about 2 months, and they're in Europe, so they said yes." So it had like a two bedroom apartment and condo. So we went there and we stayed there for about a month and a half, something like that.
All three of you, or just you and David?
No, all three of us. She had her own room and we had ours. Yeah, and you know, that still didn't save us because he was going through still his mental things about what had happened to him. Plus he was, you know, there was, you know, he was being plagued by all these people, Aleister Crowley people, and people that he was feeling like things, you know, occult things are going on and all that other stuff. So he was kind of in that vibe by that time.
Yeah, it seemed like he was dealing with a lot of personal demons at that time.
Yeah. It was like I knew to myself, I said, well, this is probably it, because I could see that he was still very much affected by this, what was going on. And it was super emotional for him. So, you know, that was one of the last times we saw each other. We saw each other a couple more times, and he had rented Marilyn Monroe's house and he invited me there.
Oh, wow. What was that like at Marilyn's house?
It was beautiful, but it was kind of creepy because I was like, "Is this Marilyn's house?" I'm like, "Really?" I mean, it was a beautiful house though, had a nice pool and everything. And so, I think we were good until Claudia decided she was like dating Ronnie Wood, and they invited us to Montauk when they were doing the Steel Drums tour, rehearsing. So she asked me if I wanted to go, and I said yes, because Ronnie said bring Ava. So yeah, because Ronnie was a friend of ours. I mean, David used to, we all used to hang out together. So we got there, and you know, Mick and I and David had all hung out together before, so Mick knew me real well, right? And we got there, and so apparently Mick had gotten into an accident. He fell through a glass and cut his arm. So he had his arm in a sling. And so they were rehearsing, and so we were all laughing and having a good time. And all of a sudden Mick walked in and he saw me and he was like, "Oh, wow, Ava, what was Ava doing?" And so anyway, make a long story short, at the end of the night, I ended up hanging out with Mick because I knew Mick like that, you know. And so and my girlfriend Claudia, she was hanging out with Ronnie, and but some kind of way David heard about it, and I think that was the last straw. That was the thing that made him, that made us break up, because even though I'd never done anything, I mean, never ever done any betrayed him with any other man outside, you know, when we were together, I think it was when, because things were so sensitive. And my thing about Mick was that he was a friend and I needed somebody to reach out to that knew David. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. I needed
that emotional, that we had all hung out together and laughed and had a good time. And I felt comfortable with being around Mick. But, you know, David didn't see it like that. So, you know, when I tried to call him and I called Naaman, and I said, "Can you please ask David to call me?" And so one of the girls said, he's mad at you. And I said, "What?" She goes, "Because he heard you were up in Montauk with Mick, with the Stones." And I said, "Oh." And there was really nothing I could say, because it was what it was, you know? But I still loved him. The only reason that I reached out to, you know, because we were all friends and he was such a cool guy. But I also just felt emotionally kind of good with him. You know what I'm saying? And so, and I was just desperate to be around anybody that we were together, that we'd have been together with somebody. And so, you know, I guess I didn't really realize that, you know, that he would be jealous that, you know, of that. But I guess that's a feather in my cap that he would be, because a lot of men might not have been, you know what I'm saying? I guess that must have meant something. So, you know, but like I said, I still carried on loving him for such a long time after that.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you remember the last time you were in touch with David, either in person or on the phone?
Oh, no. Long time. By the time I tried to reach out to him, he was already in, it had already been diagnosed with cancer. I think it was in chemo. They weren't letting him, giving him his emails or sending him his emails or whatever. I just, the last time I saw him was when he and Iman got engaged. And Iman, who I knew before they were together, but I didn't know that they were dating each other. And I don't know even if they were dating each other during that time. It was it just so happened that, you know, a friend of mine had invited me to their engagement party. And so I was, you know, I got all dressed up and I think I looked fabulous. And of course she looked fabulous. She always does. And she walks over to me and she says, Ava, look at the engagement ring David gave me. So I said, I said, that's really wonderful, Iman. I hope you two will be very happy. And I mean, I didn't wish any, I wish that they would be happy, but I felt hurt inside. I did. I have to admit. I felt, wow, you know, it was time. I mean, it was a while after me that he started dating her. And I guess just in my heart, I didn't think he was going to be with another black girl. That's all I'm saying. But, you know, then the Billboard came out with an article that said before there was Iman, there was Ava Cherry. And that's right, because Iman always says that she knows David Jones. I didn't really know David Jones. I knew David Bowie.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know David Jones. He showed his David Jones side when he stopped doing drugs and everything like that. But I saw David Bowie. I mean, I was there with, you know, some of the most prolific stuff, early prolific stuff. But I just, you know, but I mean, you know, I understand that people can, you know, I believe he loved me. I certainly loved him, and I believe he loved me. He showed me, and whenever we took pictures together, he always looked at me as though he loved me and the way that he treated me. But, you know, you could love more than one person in a lifetime. And he found someone else that he loved dearly and deeply. And I was glad that he did. I was glad. I was glad that those times of, you know, the drug stuff and the emotional feelings about other things going on was gone, and that he found someone that he could feel, you know, calm with and love and love him back. I never saw it as something, you know, in any kind of affront to me. I saw it as that phase that I was with him, he loved me, and then he went into another phase. And I mean, I've loved more than one person than him. So I'm just saying that that's what happens, you know. And I was glad that he was, you know, well and happy and all of that.
Is there one memory for you that's sort of like a snapshot that for you encapsulates your time together, one that's really one of your favorite moments together?
I would have to say when I first met him that night in the club and in Deauville, because we were like, it was in Deauville, it was like being in this incredible castle it was all about love. And being together and being warm and then doing the music too. But it felt so right. I would have to say Deauville was one of the most beautiful times of my life.
And you keep him alive in your music. You recently released an amazing cover of Let's Dance, and you've covered a few of his songs too, Moonage Daydream and Life on Mars. What are you working on now? I know you have an album due out soon.
Well, now I just, you know, during the summer, I had a song out called Testify Love that's out there, which I think is a great song. And I wrote it and produced it. And In My Soul came like about a couple months ago. And right now we're working on a film about my life with him. So we the COVID has slowed down. We were going to start shooting in last March, but then the COVID slowed everything down. So we're still working on that, and it's going to be brilliant. It's just going to be good. It's going to be the truth. It's going to be to some like a fairy tale, because it certainly was to me. I never knew anybody that had those experiences like I did. I felt like a princess. I did. The black princess. And, you know, my fans, he started them calling me Black Barbarella, because when we did the 1980 floor show, they had me wearing these real futuristic outfits. And so I was like Jane Fonda.
Like Jane Fonda, yeah.
Yeah, so they called me Black. And I had a fan club. They had my fan club, Black Barbarella. And so he would call me Black Barbarella. He would go, okay, who's a clever girl, Black Barbarella? I just thought that but that was his favorite thing with me. Who's a clever girl? If I would do something, because I was always trying to do things that would make him say, wow, you did that. And whenever I do something amazing, he'd go, who's a clever girl, man?
That's incredible.
Black Barbarella.
You mentioned learning a lot from David. What do you think he learned from you? What was your impact on him, you think?
You know, I contributed a lot to this pop culture. And I think that also what I contributed to David was his making him feel less vulnerable to people, because we would sometimes get out of limousine and kids would rush up to him and go, David, and he would you know, kind of jump back like he was, you know, maybe be afraid. And I said, David, don't be afraid. These are your fans. They love you. They love you. And he started seeing that when people would come up to him, he wouldn't recoil. He would, and he even said that to me. He says, you make me feel good when I'm around other people. And, you know, I just think that that's what he saw in me. He saw that I was a good person. I didn't have a mean bone in my body. I've run into people that I've talked to, knew over the years. And I said, what was I like? Because I can't remember everything. They said, Ava, and I mean it, I'm not stroking myself. It's Ava, you were so sweet and so nice. You never were mean to anybody. You were always anybody that, you know, wanted to speak to David or talk to, you know, you were always just sweet. And that made me feel good, because I never thought I was a bitch of any kind. And I never tried to be, you know, I never did. I felt lots of daggers in my back, though, a lot, you know, from a lot of people that didn't want me around because they thought I had too much influence over David, you know, and that bothered me, because I never tried to make any enemies or anything like that, but it was just the nature of the beast that being around someone like David, who everybody wanted and everybody wanted to be around and everybody wanted to sleep with, everybody wanted to work with, everybody, you know.
That baggage just must have been so tough to deal with, when you just wanted it to be you two. And sometimes I'm sure you wanted to just go down, walk down the banks of the Seine, or go to have a dinner together at a restaurant and not be in the back room and just be like a normal couple in love.
Yes. And we had those opportunities to do just that, you know, because a lot of the musicians, you know, they weren't really on the social. You know, David loved and respected all his musicians. But, you know, his private life, he kept pretty private. Yeah. And it wasn't about, you know, having, you know, dinner with the whole band or anything like that or whatever. Like, I mean, you know, he did it, but it was not, like, if he was with someone that he wanted to be with, like a woman or whatever, no, it was more, you know, he would do things, but he wanted to be with that person that he was with. But like I said, he taught me so many things about just, you know, how to be in the rock world and just and flourish and be okay and be in, you know, my mom is always saying to me, if you die tomorrow, you've done more than a whole lot. You've done their whole lifetime. And yeah. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess maybe that could be true.
Off the Record is a production of iHeartRadio. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a review. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death, we all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.